What's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. I am Jack Allen, and as tradition calls for, please go follow me on Twitter at Kojak Podcast and Instagram. And then I'm also on, my light here is on my face. And then I'm also, you can support the show with a Patreon and all those things. They're all my links are in the show notes. And please subscribe to YouTube. We're at like 570 subscribers. So thank you guys for subscribing. It means a lot. And today's episode, well, first, I never do. My dad sent me this awesome article about, obviously, everyone knows the big news, these mass shootings. And I don't even know what to like say. You know, it's just so sad. And we're just so beyond divided. I mean, I don't know how you bridge that gap. I don't know. Like immediately, if it's you already know what both sides are going to say. And I agree with, you know, I don't think that there should be we can easily see this is a slippery slope. If you make gun laws, it's a slippery slope. So what's a dead, you know, this is too deadly of a gun. Well, then now it's just such a slippery slope. Once they start doing that, do I trust the government? Does the government ever want my best interest? Never, never. So immediately that's a side I'm on, but I also try to put myself in the shoes of these kids' parents and people that were at these events. And I don't know what you say. I don't know. Is there an answer? I don't know. I don't know if there's an answer, but we're so beyond divided I don't know. And this article I can post in the show notes. It was like written pretty well, was like pretty unbiased relatively. And it said how in the 50s, it was actually a complaint that the political parties were so similar that people couldn't tell them apart. I mean, wow, dude, and that was in 1950s. That was literally the issue. They wanted to have a more European system where they're this opposite end of the spectrum or totally opposite on every single thing that happens. The one takes the one side, the other takes the other. What we have now. I mean, isn't it? Like, can you, I wasn't even born yet. I don't think when Reagan got like that, you know, the huge landslide. And so even since then, the world has changed or America has changed so much. And I don't know how you overcome this differences with us. You already know, like whenever it's almost like I get sad when these events happen because I'm like, oh, dude, Twitter is going to be filled with this of people fighting. And I follow people on like both sides of the aisle because I like to see what both sides say. And you know what's going to be said if it's a gun, it's gun control, white supremacy. It's just the same thing. If it's not a white person that did it, then it goes to gun control. And then if it's the Buffalo one, it's white supremacy. And I don't know. I just don't. It's like, I have no words for it. I wish I had like a better take but I hate to see how people just fight. And it's not like anyone actually fighting cares. That's what I think is like the most disgusting part. Like our politicians that are using this for political gain on both sides of the aisle. They don't care. They don't care at all. They're just trying to stay their awesome job where they're illegally investing in the stock market or legally investing, I guess, but immorally investing. And they just want a clip so that they can put on Twitter and be like, look what I said to this guy. Oh, I'm so tough. It's just sickening, dude. And every time, and then I also like the conspiratorial part of my mind, I'm thinking, oh God, dude, did the CIA do this? And oftentimes they do, but you can't, you know, it's just, that's why I hate current events so much, but I just wanted to say something about it because it's sad, dude. It's sad. Like we are so grouped. I don't know how you bring us together. And it's made that way, right? You can't have a populace that gets along if you want to enforce tyranny. You need a populace that's so divided that they're willing to, and you see this on Twitter, willing to physically hurt the other side of the political aisle for their set of beliefs or opinions. And they encourage this. The media constantly encourages this. Things like calling a Democrat a demon rat. And what do they call Republicans? I don't know, racist or whatever. It's like, and they encourage it. They want us fighting each other so much so they can just then enact whatever they want to do. And we'll cheer it on because it's our side. And I think Odd Man, he always has those good quotes. He has like a few quotes like that. That's him. I'm butchering whatever he says poetically, but we cheer on our guy enforcing things that we don't like. Just the way like Trump had that quote, you take the guns first before you whatever. I mean, and people said, oh, he's joking, because we're so, people have no religion. So God's out. So you need to worship something. You need to have faith in something that's like human nature. And people put it in their government or these politicians that they hate. They hate you. They hate you. And not people in our community so much, but that we're a very small community, you know? I don't know. I know my take here was horrible. There was no take at all, except that it's just sad. But that's what it is, dude. It's so sad. And I don't know, again, where do we go from here? Is there a way? I know the people at the top, they need us to keep fighting, whether it's race lines, social class, or, you know, financial status lines, class warfare. But I don't know. Fat Elvis, what's up, dude? Thanks for watching. Thanks for coming. So let's just get to today's show. I don't have a hot takes. Some people are really brilliant with their takes. That's why my podcast is me reading a book and doing the notes, because that I can do. Hot takes is not my ball game. Wheez Plato, what's up, dude? Thanks for coming. We already have like five people here, so that's awesome. So today's episode, The Curse of Canaan by Eustace Mullins. And this is part one. And I did a Eustace book back with the Our Kids show. I don't know if I did two parts on that or just one part. I can't remember, but that was his book as well. And he's an awesome author. I think he's dead now. Old guy, you know, OG writer in like the 80s, 90s. I always respect those guys like pre-internet. I mean, dude, you were probably like in the library, like digging through stuff. Even Don Jeffries, who we had on the other day. I mean, like these guys, these authors, they go find the primary sources. You got to respect that, dude. Don like was emailing and writing letters to people to try and get, you know, documents and stuff like that. Just amazing, dude. So Jeff, if you want to check out Eustace's book, they're all on Amazon. And I always openly admit this. I am not a biblical scholar by any stretch. I bet many of the listeners here know more people know way more about the Bible than I do. And I'm not ashamed to admit that. So this is going to be all of his work. So if you have a correction, I had one of my buddies, Richard, on Twitter. He had the author Eustace talks about, we'll get to it, but he had a differing opinion and I Googled it and there was like both opinions. I couldn't find what the answer was. So this is all his opinion. You Bible scholars that know way more than me, if you want to correct me, go for it, dude, or give me your opinion. I have no skin in this game, but I've heard about this Canaanite, and I think it provides a pretty good reason or possibility of why the evil that exists in our world. Because I'm a firm believer that people like you and me and all of our family and friends and stuff like that, yes, we do bad things. We're human. We're not perfect, but we're not evil. And that's why all of these things have been able to happen to us that have been worked against humanity, international banking, whatever, wars, famines, all this stuff like that. It's happened because the regular people don't believe that people are capable of doing these evil things. And this theory provides why these evil people are capable of doing these things, because they're a different breed, so to speak. All right, let's get started. I got to take a big breath. Yeah, in fact, so Mullins, he's referencing a lot of books. Fat Alpha says he heard Mullins reference all the time, but he's got this book, NWO, which is the one where he had the Rothschild. And that was just like a chapter that he had more of the book, but I switched topics. It went away from the R kids. So definitely check out his, dude, reading has never hurt anybody. So go check out his stuff. But so we're going to dig right in. And also, see, I know this is a heated topic, so I'm like prefacing this stuff because I know it's heated. Like I had Ken Amee on, and he says, you know, the Giants didn't exist or whatever. Again, this is all Eustace's work. I couldn't defend it if I even tried. So take it, if you know more, take it for what it's worth. I respect this. This author used to put lots of work into studying this stuff. So I take his, you know, I'm taking it and displaying it to you. All right, that's all I want to say. So the Nephilim were in Earth those days. These giants later became known as the sons of Anak. And so here's this little, if you guys are watching, I got a, what's up, Brian? So I got a little picture here of like the a regular human to these Nephilim and giants. And so this guy, the infographic that I have, he is like a little human in the corner at 6 feet. And then he says like Goliath was 12 to 18 feet. And then the real giants were these 24 to 36 feet tall people, humans, giants, which unfathomable, dude. If, you know, I the Bible, like I'm learning, is like the greatest movie ever, dude. If so, that's why I started reading it. It's tough to like leisurely read the Bible if you guys ever tried to do like, because it's written in this crazy, these crazy language. But yeah, so anyway, so these giants, these were huge. They're not like Shaq tall, dude. We're talking like building tall, big, burly brutes. And they had these truly evil habits. And their leader is Satan, the serpent that entered into the garden and seduced Eve, which eventually produces the first murderer, Cain. So these are some of like the most violent beings to exist. Obviously, being the offspring of Satan, they're not going to be good people. This is obvious. And they would kill each other. They would eat their victims, introducing cannibalism to our early ancestors. And some accounts say that the Archangel Michael, this badass, I've seen this painting before. They said that he came, imprisoned the fallen angels deep in the waters of the chasms of the earth. And that's awesome, dude. That sounds like a better Marvel movie than anything I've ever seen, dude. So that's awesome. If someone knows more about Michael, send that over to me, because that sounds awesome. But anyway, not all was done. Satan had established his demonic presence on earth and continued with his bloodline with Cain. And this ultimate battle on earth, it was God's children versus Satan's offspring, the line of Cain. And the book of Zohar, which is one of the, another ancient book about our early beginnings. It stresses in the Talmudic legend that demons originated in this sexual congress between humans and these fallen angels. And when I say sexual congress, I mean like, you know, this, what we would think of as like orgy or ritual sex, occult sex, magic kind of stuff. And that's what started this line of demons. So that's why all occult ceremonies have these incantations, like spells that they say, like think Parsons when he was out in the desert with L. Ron Hubbard swapping wives, banging each other, doing God knows what they were doing. But that's why they have all these things they say and draw, like the sigils, because this is what supposedly these demons taught humanity, or the Canaanites. And sorry, my nose is runny. And so that's why also they have these bizarre sexual practices, because that's what the demons were doing in these ancient times, which makes a lot of sense. I think that's pretty easy dot and connection to make. But while wandering the desert, the Jewish tribes had to wander the desert for 40 years. They lost faith in God. They were worshiping demons and monsters like the golden calf when Moses, that's probably the only like biblical story I know. And hopefully I'm making right on this connections. And thanks, Brian. I hope it's a cool episode too. I'm not too confident right now doing this because I know history better than I know Bible. But we'll see. I'm loving the book, dude. It's so amazing. It's helping me understand. So that's why I thought this episode would be good, because some people are very knowledgeable in one area. Some are not so much like me in the other. Hey, Barbara, what's up? So anyway, they're wandering the desert. They're losing faith in God, and they're starting to worship these demons. They're making sacrifices to the demon Azrael. Azazel. And I think he's actually, so I put a little graph here or a little picture of all the demons. So you have Lucifer, who's pride, Mammon, greed, Belgopher, he's sloth, Asmodeus, lust, Beelzebub, gluttony, Satan, wrath, Leviathan, envy, Azazel. Oops. Oh, and I can't see because of the, but what's crazy is I really got to look into this more, but how this Talmud and stuff like that, it talks like about these demons as real, right? As like, these are the actual events that happened. So this really adds an interesting aspect to this ancient time, because I do believe that there is evil presence on this earth. And I believe it is demons. I don't believe in aliens. I don't believe that there's men in spaceships flying down that are anally probing people. I think it's much more likely that there's a multi-dimensions or whatever you want, these interdimensional beings, demons, they pull strings on earth, because I can't think of another reason why life is the way it is for so many people. It's so sad and things like that, or they make these life choices because of the demons. That in my mind works, and hopefully, or you can accept that or disagree with that. But So anyway, they're in the desert. They're worshiping Azazel in there. They're doing sacrifices for him. And this mythology creates a hierarchy of demons, which I just showed. And a demon monarch, Satan, he ruled over all the demons on earth. And then also known as the prince of evil was Baal. So Baal is like his first commandment or his first commander, his general. So Satan's the top dog. And then you have Baal as number two. And he's known as, has a few other names as well, but Baal is what we, in the conspiracy world, we all see Baal and Moloch all the time. So next was Asmodeus. He was the king of the demons and his wife was Lilith and she was the chief demoness. And Lilith, we talked about her in the My Feminist episode. So Lilith is like the patron saint of feminists because she wouldn't lie down underneath Adam. And then so she left and just started going into men's rooms at night and sleeping with them and killing them or doing whatever she does. Barbara says, their report, what's Canaan, the Holy Land? So we'll get into Canaan. I don't know if there's like an easy answer, but it's all around. It's in an area around the Holy Land. Okay, so we got Lilith, chief demoness. And the Book of Zohar says every pollution of semen gives birth to demons. So I'm pretty sure that's what the Canaanites believe. They believe like if they do certain spells, sex on certain nights, a certain ritual, you will help your offspring will be, you know, closely related to one of your chief demons, your pantheon of demons. And this makes a lot of sense to me too, because the fake elite, these predator class, these top upper echelon people, they are so concerned with their bloodlines. And we've seen that from examples of how almost every US president is related to each other. But they have like the our kids, they have extensive records of how far their family goes back and where they come from, and which they came from Venetia, which we're going to get to in a second. But so I can see this happening. This is why. And I started reading this book, Hitler Was a British Agent. And in that book though, they talk about how that prima noctra where the rich, if you were a poor person, you had to ask permission from the Duke or whatever to marry somebody. And then that guy would rape your wife the night of your wedding because you couldn't handle taking her virginity. And the our kids in Bavaria were involved with this. And they would do, especially on like Halloween on the 31st, they would have like this big where they would sneak into these women's windows and rooms and all this stuff like that. Real crazy stuff. I mean, real sick stuff. But so I'm just saying this, that this is a religious aspect of this, like demon worship is sex on certain nights to conceive. It's very planned out. It's not just like, oh, it's Friday the 12th. Let's do it this way to make this. But it's like, you know, laid out in almost like a mathematical sense. So the Kabbalah claims that Lilith had intercourse with Adam and produced demons as part of the cosmic design. So in the Kabbalah, it's like viewed as this balance of good and evil, right? So it needs good needs to exist with the same amount of evil existing. And she quarreled with Adam, couldn't lie. He couldn't lie on top of her. She dipped. She said, I'm out of here. You're not on top. I'm on top, I guess. Very important to Lilith. Why? I don't know. I don't know why it's important to Lilith, but regardless it was. And so she dipped out of there. So God said, all right, Adam, she left. They say that Lilith was made out of mud and filth. So this time God says, I'm not doing that mistake again. We're going to make Eve out of Adam's rib. But the damage was done. Damage was done, guys. It was already had some demon kids, and the evil and demons had been established on earth. So he needed a redo, and we all need a redo every now and then, but he wanted to keep the good and get rid of the evil. So, you know, Adam and Eve, Noah, he picks Noah as his guy to save humanity. And he says, get all the animals in the world. You're going to need a big old boat, buddy, a big old boat. And isn't that like, it's so funny as a kid, you're real young and they tell you that story and it's believable. You're a child. You don't know. And then as you get to school, you start thinking about this stuff, like in science class, they mock it. They tell you it's not real. And that's what made, I walked away from, like, I didn't stop going to church. And not that I was like a big church guy, but I got confirmed and all that stuff, but I didn't believe it because of school. You hate listening to your parents because of propaganda. They tell you should rebel and things like that. And I thought in my mind, oh, Christianity, that's so why, like, science is right. But it's there's so much evidence that backs this stuff up. So it's an amazing. So regardless, his rain's going to come and he builds this boat. It weighs 36,000 tons, 450 feet long, 75 feet wide, and 45 feet in depth. Now, it is a big ass boat, okay, but not big enough to take tons, you know, take every single animal. So you get one of each, right? And God, even, dude, I mean, this, like, anything I learned about the Bible was like, oh my God, that's so smart, dude. But he said, no banging. You can't have these animals reproducing on your boat. You don't have the room. Nobody's reproducing. You got to keep it in your pants. And that was the rule because you don't have the room for 10 giraffes, right? Noah can't feed a baby rhinoceros. He needs to keep them separated. And he did that. But as always, people have a break the rules. And wait, I'm just reading Weez Plato's. I haven't seen the full, but on Fritz Springmeier's Bloodlines of the Illuminati, he thinks the Rothschilds bloodline traces to Babylon. Dude, totally believe. And I'm going to get into that in a second, but I totally agree. I totally agree. So, yeah. So he says, you can't do it, but someone broke the rules, dude. Someone broke the rules. Ham, bad name, dude. Ham. Imagine being named Ham today. Where I'm from, there's the Iron Pigs and the mascot's name is Ham Bone. But anyway, Ham had intercourse with a pre-Adamite woman on the ark. So for people listening, I have a little picture of an Adamite and pre-Adamite, and I'm not insulting. I had to look up what pre-Adamite meant because I knew it was meant before Adam, but I was confused with the Bible. So pre-Adamite was it was like a relatively later hypothesis that there were human-like beings on Earth, but they weren't human. And those are the pre-Adamites. And they eventually disappear from the flood, but they're the ones that, so they bring a pre-Adamite on the boat, Ham hooks up with the pre-Adamite. And so their offspring was a son named Cush who became the symbol of Ethiopia, Cushite. And I've seen that term before as well. So Noah, he feels horrible. He's God's man, dude. He has a lot of responsibility on this guy. He had to save humanity, dude. So he's very important and he's got a lot on his shoulders and his son acts up. So he's just waiting. He feels horrible. He feels like he let God down and you can see why. I mean, if you had the humanity rest on your shoulders and your son's the one that's screwing up. So he's just waiting for God to punish him. He's drinking. He's very upset, very upset. He drank a whole bunch of wine the one night to forget his woes. We've all been there. We've been there. I used other substances to forget my woes, but I've been there. You've been there. And he got so drunk, he laid exposed. And then something happened. Either his kids walked in on him and saw him. The Bible doesn't say, and there's all these different theories. So this is Eustace's theory, but basically he says that Ham possibly committed a homosexual act against Noah because Noah's response, put a curse on Canaan and the land of Canaan and all for 3,000 years, this curse has plagued humanity. So it had to be something big. It couldn't just be like he was sleeping and they saw him and he got real mad. Like I'm pretty sure the Bible doesn't say why, but there's something important there, dude. Something bad happened. So Eustace thinks it's like he defiled his father, something degenerate and disgusting. And that's why Noah placed this curse on humanity. Yeah, so the curse of Canaan, which extended to the land, which named after it, the land of Canaan, and they were the curse on, they themselves were the curse on humanity themselves. And I have this awesome little family tree of Noah. So Noah had Ham, and that he had Cush, Nimrod, and we're going to get all into that. Shem, they were Ham's group of followers. They were polytheist. Shem, his group was monotheist. And then Japheth, who is also a polytheist. And whether this is, I'm not a biblical scholar, so I'm just saying what I've found on the internet. The theory is that Ham, Shem, and Japheth, they all spread to different parts of the world. So Japheth, it says he was in Europe, Russia, Iran, Iraq. Shem was in Arabia and modern day Israel. And then Ham was in Babylon, Egypt, North Africa, Syria, and Jordan. And then I've seen other ones that there's a lot of, that's what I also found by doing the show, is there's a lot of mixed theories. And I guess that's all we have is theories. So I'm sure people will believe one thing or the other, but this provides the reasoning of why there's different races, is because Noah's children were like one of, they populated each area. Like it said, Ham was, he was like African, Shem was like Middle Eastern, and Japheth was Indian, or around all that space. So whether that's true or not, I don't know, but that's like the theories I found on the internet. So anyway, the curse, Noah cursed Canaan and humanity itself because of this curse, because these people, as we'll find out, they kept going. So demon worship, occult rites, child sacrifice, cannibalism, all this stuff that was done in the Canaanite land with the Canaans. And they brought these obscene practices all over the world. They spread, including Egypt. And in Egypt, they talk a lot about the Phoenicians. And we talk about the Phoenicians in Freemasonry, right? My Freemasonry episodes, that's who the Templars communicated with, the Phoenicians. And that's who provided them with these Gnostic secrets, the mystery schools, the secrets of occult and Kabbalah and everything like that. And the Templars picked that up. And that's one of the theories why they were killed. And Templars became Freemasons. And so this knowledge, this secret rites, it all stems from the land of Canaan and Ham's group and these demon worshipers. And that's that secret knowledge, that gnosis, like what Gnostic stands for, I think, to learn or something. That's that knowledge that they have, supposedly. And then during medieval times, so it went from Canaanites, they changed their name to Phoenicians. From then, they changed their name as Venetians. And the same ones who destroyed the Byzantine Christian civilization. And the Venetians, I recently learned, was that's where a lot of the central bankers came from, was from Venetia. So like the Arkids are from Venetia. Their roommates, the Schiffs, they were from Venetia, and both changed their names, but from these areas. But it was very interesting to me that, so just like how I think Wiesplater just said that the Arkids traced their lineage back to Babylon and Nimrod, I can see why authors and conspiracy people have thought of that. And Mackman says they made it all the way to Jekyll Island. Dude, long trip, huh? They were going, took some time, but they made it there. So then changing their name again. Oh, this was crazy. And then after they changed their name, we went Canaanites, Phoenicians, Venetians, they then become the Black Nobility. And when I read that, I was like, damn, that makes, because we hear so much about the Black Nobility. And they say they're like the old Italian power families, Medici and all these groups, but a lot of them, we don't even know their names because they're just so powerful. So I found that interesting. I thought that makes a little bit of sense. Rome was so powerful for so long. These families, they don't just say, well, our civilization's done. No, they've got all the money in the world, even back then. So they're not just going to give up their wealth. They're going to move with the times. Oh, that sounds interesting, Wiesplato. He talks about the Book of the Dead invocation practices. I think I bring this, I'm going to talk about the Book of the Dead here too. So yeah, they just kept changing their name, and then they infiltrated nations of Europe, gradually assumed power through trickery, revolution, financial practices. Because what were the Phoenicians known for? They were these massive trading, they were like the sea people. They traded everywhere. They were the only ones that could get the color purple. I mean, they had, so, and that was like royalty. That's why there's a group on Twitter that I don't agree with, but they are big on the purple. But the Phoenicians were the ones that had that ability to trade, and the Venetians as well. So these people, they realized the power in commerce and merchants. So they just went from merchants and commerce and trade in the olden days to bankers of today. So we can see this connection of this evil group, because to be like a international banker, dude, you have to be a special type of evil. You know what you're doing to people. You know that you're enslaving them, but yet you do it. Like, how could you sleep at night? I couldn't sleep at night knowing people are starving because of me. And so that's why, yeah. Anyway. Ooh, Wiesplato says, without the Book of the Dead and the Cabal, there's no MK Ultra. I like that, dude. It's definitely crazy stuff, dude. So then, if you, I, like I said, I don't know the Bible, but I, and I've heard of the Canaanites, but only in the conspiracy world. I've never heard it like in history class or anything like that. And they're an actual group, right? They're an actual provable historical group, but yet they're never brought up. And that's interesting because we know who writes the history, the winners, the bankers, they write the history books. And if they were possible, even if they believe they were a Canaanite, or if they actually are, you can see why they're erased and not relevant. You know, we talk about the Romans and all this stuff, but we don't mention this huge group that was a huge force in these biblical times. So you have Ham, Noah's son, and he had four kids: Cush, who went to Ethiopia; Mizraim, who went to Egypt; Put, Libya, and Canaan. And that's where they founded the land of the Canaanites. So Osiris was part of the Cushite group, and I got a little picture of Osiris. And that was something that was also really interesting, was that Mullins, he connects the Egyptian pantheon and gods to the biblical books, which I was like, that I never heard that before, but, and here we go. This is, so Osiris was part of the Cushite group. So he was a descendant of Cush. And this is who made gods phallus, who made the phallus, the god of worshiping the phallus, you know, the big, the George Washington monument, those obelisk, that's literally penis worship. That's what that represents. That's what it was in Egypt. So, and also interesting to note, during the Civil War, they were focused on getting an obelisk from Egypt to New York. In the 1850s, dude, their boats weren't exactly, it wasn't smooth sailing, and it was a huge thing. I think Albert Pike was behind it. And you're in the middle of a civil war. Why do you want this obelisk so bad, this penis? He knew what it represented. Very weird. Very weird. So that's what they, and you can see why, because these are, the phallus stems from these Canaanite worship of demons, et cetera, et cetera. Oh, and then regardless of that, so Ham, this was crazy, dude. Ham, so Noah's son, who slept with the pre-Adamite woman who then gave birth to Cush, he stole his, Noah got Adam and Eve's clothing from the Garden of Eden. And Cush took them when he passed and passed them on to his son, Nimrod. And now we've all heard of Nimrod in the conspiracy world, but this is what got Nimrod's power, was that he had worn the clothes that Adam and Eve wore that God gave them after they ate from the tree. That was where he got his power, and he was invincible. This was Nimrod, almost invincible, right? He eventually dies, but that's what gave him his power, was this clothing of Adam and Eve. I mean, crazy, right? That sounds, and the Bible is just fascinating, dude. Even if you're not Christian or whatever, at bare minimum, dude, it's an amazing, amazing story, but I believe in it. So, but it's just so fascinating, dude, like a time of just craziness. But anyway, so that's what made Nimrod so powerful. Nimrod, he is the evil of the evil, dude. He became known as the Mighty Hunter, and he was invincible as long as he wore these garments, which had great power. And so Nimrod was born on December 25th at the High Sabbath of Babylon and became known as the founder of Babylon. And that's why a lot of people talk about Nimrod. I'm pretty sure, did they ever find that dude's peen? Dude, they're still looking. It's small and they can't find it. All right, that's a bad joke, but funny joke. But Nimrod, though, a lot of people, Zeitgeist, the documentary, I despise, R.I.P. Jordan Maxwell. He's, you know, a deceiver. He's a theosophist, but that's the guy who's helped produce Zeitgeist. So his big thing of crushing Christianity is to show you all these gods that were born on December 25th, Nimrod being one of them, Mithras, all of these people. And December 25th, I don't know who chose that date, but I'm sure that the date is nowhere in the Bible. We had my friend on here that told us about Revelations, and that's not when Jesus was born. So it's easily believable that whoever decided this date was the day we were going to celebrate Jesus' birth was the date that a lot of the population who was pagan would be able to respect and understand. Okay. So that was Nimrod's birthday, though, December 25th. In our history, mankind, Nimrod is unequaled for his symbolism of evil and satanic practices. He's credited for founding Freemasonry and for building, obviously, the Tower of Babel in defiance of God's will. So he was a powerful king, dude, the evil of the evil. And like I said, Nimrod is a huge part of Freemasonry and secret societies. He is their guy. Yeah, he's their god. So not only when Nimrod heard of Abraham's birth, he ordered all the male children to be killed in Babylon. And Abraham was hidden. And when Nimrod found him later, he told him he must worship fire. Abraham wouldn't worship the fire, and he was thrown into the fire. And this was crazy. So the legendary, like this makes what I was just saying about December 25th, the legendary symbol for Nimrod is an X. Dun, dun, dun. This symbol denotes witchcraft. So don't say Merry Xmas, because now you're truly taking the birth of Christ that we celebrate on this day, and you're giving like, you're building energy to this secret mystery religion. And it's so funny. My dad, when I was a little kid, I saw Merry Xmas, and he said, don't ever say Merry Xmas. You can take the extra second to write Merry Christmas or say Merry Christmas. And now he's way ahead of his time. I'm sure he didn't even know that it represented Nimrod, and he was right. So definitely don't say that. That's where you're putting energy in this evil thing. But a double X usually means like a double cross. And so, you know, like double betraying somebody into the hands of Satan. So I'm sure it's totally by accident that ExxonMobil has the double X, which is a split of Standard Oil of New Jersey, Rockefeller. I'm sure is that a conspiracy or just a coincidence? I would probably say it was planned. Rockefeller definitely was involved in these secret groups. Exxon, you could spell with one X, dude. You would still say it Exxon. With this way, it says like Exxon, you know? So I found that interesting as well. But regardless, these garments gave Nimrod allowed him to be the first man to rule the whole world. And his city of Babylon became the symbol of depravity and lust and just all things that we associate with secret societies and degeneracy. That was Babylon, dude. And everyone says all that stuff. I don't want to get into Jordan Maxwell, but I know, dude, right? I know. So Babylon was this evil place. And he's also was one of the first guys to have this, to start genociding people. Like he was the first, he was an evil, evil dude, Nimrod. And Nimrod's grandfather, Ham, was persuaded by his consort, Nama, to practice ritual murder and cannibalism to regain superior qualities, like to reverse a curse placed upon them, the curse of Canaan. So that I found super interesting. So this lady who's, you know, banging Ham and Nimrod or whatever, one of them, and she says, you need to do these evil things because it gives you power. And immediately I thought of the Sabbatean Frankists, who we talked about a long time ago, but they're this group that David Icke, I think I first heard of them from him, but basically they flit. It's from this guy in the 1500s. He was kind of like a Gnostic. He was a part of every religion. He just wore whatever mask he wanted. And he was the Antichrist, and he claimed. And so he had over a million followers in the 1500s. And what they believed was everything needs. So if you do evil things, that's how you get to heaven. Because he had this Gnostic view that like the God of this earth is evil, so you need to be more evil. So he slept with his daughter. He sacrifices all these horrible things. And I'm blanking on his name right now. But yeah, so that's why I found that interesting, that this even Nama thought that if you, by doing evil things, and so that's where you can see how Sabbatean Frankists and these secret societies do these evil things because they believe it gives them power. And I know it's been mocked to oblivion, but Wadrinochrome, I think that's kind of maybe why this conspiracy started, because, and possibly they are absolutely possibly doing that. But you can see why, if this is the same information that we have, they have. So if they believe Nama says you can regain power that way, that's why they do it. So not, I said, he killed. So Nimrod, not falling far from the apple tree of his grandfather, he would kill and eat the children of Shem, who is our ancestor. It was Noah's other son, eldest son, Shem. And we're going to get a lot into Shem in a second. So not only did Nimrod kill and eat his descendants, he often burned them alive. And this type of sacrifice of these humans got the name cannibal by combining Canaan and Baal, who they were worshiping when they would throw a little baby into the fire to worship Baal. That's why cannibalism, that's where the term comes from. I found that interesting as well. So Nimrod has a few other names in history: Marduk, Bel, Merodach. And that's something that, because I've read lots of stuff about this, but it's hard to follow, you know, because there's all these people use different names and different stories. So I hope this show is going to help explain this a little bit. And hopefully you're staying with me so far. And if, for people that are very experienced, I apologize if it's like level one stuff. But I learned so much new things in this. So as I said earlier, Masons cite Nimrod as the founder of Freemasonry. But all evil loses to God. And eventually his downfall comes with the building of the Tower of Babel, which was to rise up to the heavens. Shem, the eldest son of Noah, our ancestor, he says, "That's your final straw, buddy. God told you not to build it," and he executed him. So Shem beheads the god Nimrod. And so now my friend Richard, who he might be, I don't know if he's in the chat, but I tweeted about this and we got in a little discussion. He says it was Esam that did it. And I Googled this. There's like the first answer is Shem when I Googled it. And then there's other from the book of Jasper, it says Esau did it. Regardless, Nimrod gets beheaded. By who? Does it really matter? Not so much, but just to show you that there is multiple theories. So we're just going by Mullins' theories. So Shem beheads Nimrod, and then he cuts him into pieces. Chop, chop, chop. And he sent the pieces to the pagan temples of Babylon. To all the priests, he individually sent them a piece of their god king, Nimrod. I mean, vicious move, dude, right? Vicious. And so this was meant to be as a warning to these occult priests who were doing these sex orgies, these child sacrifices, these disgusting things. This was a warning to them saying, if you don't stop, this is going to happen to you too. They didn't take it that way. They did not take it that way at all. Instead of stopping and saying, oh my God, we might get beheaded and chopped up into little pieces, they said, well, we're not doing it in the temples anymore. We're going to go out into secret places and we're going to still have our religion. You know, F you God-fearing people. We're going to have our sex orgies, whether you like it or not. And now they're not in the temple. Now they're going to be in the forest. So they hid all their barbaric practices from out in the open, which they were in Babylon. I mean, isn't that insane? Think of like, and I know I keep getting sidetracked, but like the Mayan and the ink, I think it was the Mayan, the people that they would cut their heart out beating live. If you believe in the Bible, you can see how these are connected, how they fall from this Canaanite religion and it's spread everywhere. And that's how, like, because humans, I truly believe we're inherently good. Could you imagine going to somebody and chopping out their live heart? Like, that's insane to do that, to be so serious about your religion, this evil religion. And so it just makes a lot of sense to me that that's why all these barbaric practices went on. It wasn't that humans were just like crazy and insane then. It's because this was this mystery religion that is still practiced today in Freemasonry. Oh, LaShawn, I'm so glad you're learning something, man. Thank you for saying that. So yeah, so all the priests, they hide their practices. And not only that, the priests took these pieces of Nimrod as relics to their secret meeting places. You can see how we're getting into the mystery schools here. So they're hidden in groves and shrines. And this was the origin of the secret mystery cults whose orgies and sacrifices were now kicked out of the temples and moved into hiding. So these new secret meetings that they're now having, because they can't do them in the open, they're bound to a secret rites. And no one outside the order was permitted to talk about what went on in these disgusting orgies and barbaric things. And if they did, they were promised a painful, painful death. Now, this is the origin of the Gnostics or the knowing ones. All of our secret societies stem from these pieces that were sent to the Babylonian priest, Templars, Freemasonry, Illuminati, Skull and Bones, are all practicing this Nimrod Babylonian religion. And I would believe that when you get to the top, I bet they have these actual relics or pieces of them, because they do such evil things. They are as sure as as Christians are sure that God and Jesus rose from the dead, they are just as sure from the flip side of that coin. So it does not behoove me or does not seem too ridiculous that they maintain these relics. And that's what the top secret, that's how they, that fuels their excitement for evil. And the last 3,000 years have been a pure battle between the good descendants of Shem, all of us, versus these descendants of his brother, the Ham, Cush, Nimrod, Babylonian line, the Canaanites. And so this is where it could get, you might disagree. This is what, again, what Mullen said. So in the Greek language, Shem appears as Ehu, Egypt as Shu, and Mullen speculates that Shem is actually the sun Ra, the god in ancient Egypt that they worshiped, the sun god Ra. He claims that this is actually Shem, and he was called the sun god. So we can see going a little Maxwell-y here, but S-U-N versus S-O-N, you could see the confusion of translations. So Shem would, you know, he's absolutely this, he's the son of Noah. We're all sons of God. And then the sun god, my boy, King Louis, he was also referred as the sun god. And Mullen speculates that this is because he's claiming descent of Shem, who was the Egyptian god, the first Egyptian, like, you know, he built the Egyptian empire. So all of this has been lost in our history books, obviously. I never heard this before, but Shem supposedly was the builder and the founder of the great Egyptian civilization. And the rulers of Egypt, oh, here, there's another thing there. Plato. I had a pyramid picture. I don't know when it went. But the rulers of Egypt were called pharaohs, which means long hair. The natives of Egypt, though, had short hair. So being a great warrior, Shem had this long hair, and he led his people to conquest the native Egyptians who were pagan, worshiping these this Babylonian religion. So he conquers them. And commemorating his reign, he builds the Great Pyramid of Giza. Again, according to Mullins. I thought that was an interesting theory. But Babylon was then overcome by the sons of Shem. His Elam then fully conquered by Cyrus of Persia, building the Great Persian Empire. Which, again, I never thought that you could really, like, I thought the Bible was faith. Like, you can't prove these things happened, really. Like, you're going on faith. But Mullins puts out in like a super explainable way that it really made me believe that you can tie all these great civilizations back to the Bible. What's up, David? I'm sweating. It's like hot in here. So if you see me getting greasy, it's hot in my house right now. All right. So to signify this great military success of overthrowing Babylon, Shem adopted his symbol as the lion. And still this, the lion is a symbol of many rulers today. And he was the first that used it. And to prove that, the Royal Astronomer of Scotland concluded that the evidence was irrefutable that the Great Pyramid of Giza had been built by Shem. So I thought that was awesome. You know, that gives more support to Mullins' theory. He found the name Shufu inside the pyramid painted in red, signifying Shem's fair hair. I thought that was interesting too. And also an inscription placed at there after the death of his descendant, Amenhotep IV. It was quoted, "He stopped the barbaric practices of the priest, which had been introduced by Nama and her followers from Babylon, including Nimrod." And now that was crazy. I thought that there's an actual inscription that mentions these people. I mean, dude, crazy, right? Crazy. And the priests murdered Amenhotep IV because so they could resume their orgies of lust and child sacrifices. And even Herodotus, that ancient like Greek historian, he said that the Great Pyramid had been built by a wandering shepherd. Well, Shem is a wandering shepherd. And I just say this again to the people that struggle to accept the what has been presented and maybe laugh at the Bible, that there are modern historians that also believe that these kingdoms were coming from the descendants from the Bible. But the reason why the priests kill Amenhotep is we talk about this in the feminist episode. Freedom somehow is associated with doing whatever you want, whatever carnal desire you have, while restriction is by living by a moral code and believing and having ethics and morals and acting Christian-like, when it's really the opposite. It's been inverted, right? Freedom, when you have a moral code, you have more freedom than when you're living by your carnal desires. Because then I don't have a choice when I'm listening to my carnal desires. But people like that, right? That even back then, people haven't changed. Sex feels good, right? So let's get drunk and have these huge orgies, because you could see the allure to that. We all know that that is not going to lead to positive aspects of your life, but you can see why the public was like, boo, Amenhotep, man, he's boring. He's telling me I can't, you know, kill people and I can't have these huge orgies on the full moon. Lame, dude. So they killed him, and the priests got him killed, and they brought all back. They brought back all these Babylonian practices back to Egypt. So Egyptian history reviled, they despise Shem, supposedly. So more than just calling him a wandering shepherd, they call him a pig and a dwarf. And their hatred was because he slew their leader, their king, their god, Nimrod. And now just imagine this. Again, I just said that. So if you, just to repeat, if you have a leader that says, go bang, go drink, go be merry, do whatever the F you want, the public, they follow that because many lack a moral code and they're easily guided. And if they tell you, no, this is good. Oh, that's a good thing. They're going to do it. And like we talked about earlier, they believe these practices, these barbaric practices, gave them power and would raise their ability of being gods or demigods. And you can see why they push so hard for this. So Egypt reaches peak during Shem, the reign of Shem, and a sphinx is possibly a portrait of him. But after his death, the priests resumed their evil practice and embarked on a campaign to totally black out his name from history. And they also launched punitive actions against Shem's followers or descendants, murdering or burning them alive. And his descendants were known as the Shemites or Semites. So that connected for me as well. Like, that's why the Egyptians were attacking the Jewish people, because they were Shem's descendants. They were living by a moral code. They wanted to have crazy orgies and sacrifice things to Baal. And Shem, oh, here it is, Wheeze Plato. Shem was also referenced in the Book of the Dead. He's known as Menes or Uranes, and his three sons, a reference to Noah. Ham later became known as the Egyptian god Amon. And in case you're getting confused again, so you have Shem, our guy, killer of Nimrod, an OG founder of Egypt, versus Ham, who had sex with the pre-Adamite woman on the ark, who had Cush, who then had Nimrod, and just so we can follow these family trees. So Shem had created a family line of many great kings. People like us, we are the creators. We are the lovers. We want what is good for people. We are inherently good. Though we make bad decisions, we are inherently good. Versus the descendants of Ham and the Canaanites, who have this satanic urge to destroy and just ruin anything that God created, because they are his adversaries in this world, in this story. So in Genesis, blessed be the Lord, the God of Shem, that says, and Shem had five sons: Elam, who came from the Persian Empire; Ashur, who was Assyrian Empire; Arpachshad, Lud, and Aram. So I just say that, like, that's how these other empires, like the Hittites and the Assyrians, they are descendants of Shem. And that's why they were able to create empires, because they were, like, you know, good people. They wanted to create a place, a good place, not like Nimrod. So Shem was in this battle with his nephew in Canaan, and he erased his name from all the history. And he was so evil that he had a will and testament to Canaanite children, a formula for vice. So this is like the 10 commandments for the Canaanites, and it's called the will of Canaan. And love one another that is of this tribe only. Love robbery, love lewdness, hate your masters, and do not speak the truth. And I thought that was super powerful, dude, because that is what, like, our predator class does. They love each other. They will defend each other no matter what. And we even see that among top politicians. They will defend their guy, their side, at all costs. They never speak the truth. Like, lying is hard. I lived many years living a lie, dude. For 10 years, I lied to everyone. It is not easy. It is hard to do this. So to continue doing this, to maintain greed and wealth, and it has to go farther than that in my mind. It can't just be, they want money. It has to go deeper than that. So this document, the Will of Canaan, is found in the Babylonian Talmud, where it literally says these exact things. So maybe these evil commandments, if you will help you understand how evil these secret societies are. Freemasonry places that brotherhood, that loving one another that is of this tribe only, and loyalty to your Freemason brother beyond everything. I mean, Freemasons have been known, like there's been a cases where Freemasons have gone to court, committed perjury for their brother, giving him an alibi in a murder and all these things. And we've seen how evil the Freemasons have been, and they are so beyond loyal to each other. It's scary, dude. It's like a cult almost, like the protection they gave each other. And if that's, again, like you would sacrifice your family or or innocent bystanders to support your brother, not a good thing. Secret societies, why are they have these promises of these horrible retributions if you rat or tell on your brother, like these descriptive things that'll happen to you. If you're just doing charity work, don't think you need that kind of oath. But yeah, so that this is where Freemasonry gets its brotherhood from, is from this Will of Canaan. And Shem knew nothing of these evil commandments, and his offspring knew nothing of them. So they tried to convert the Canaanites. And this is still like the operating instruction of the Canaanite heirs who control the world. They don't share this information. And this will contains instructions necessary to resist the results of the curse of Canaan, which condemned them to slavery. So that's what the will of Canaan does. It protects them from the curse, because if they do all these things, they're acting as evil as possible. It gives them power in their mind to do these evil practices. That helps you rebuke the curse. And if you wonder why there's so much death and destruction in our world, which often seems unnecessary, this is why. It's because the will of Canaan to genocide the people of Shem. And that's, I mean, think of all these wars we've gone over them, you know, World War One. It was created wars. All these wars are created, just how we talk about how Hitler was funded by Wall Street, by our kids. You wouldn't fund a guy that's going to kill your people, right? Unless you want war. And that's what these people do. They want death. They want sadness. This gives them power in their mind. These are sacrifices. And so I think that's a really important takeaway, is they believe they get power, actual superpowers, from doing these evil things. Now, maybe you're thinking, why didn't God help? Why didn't God he destroyed them with Sodom and Gomorrah, but why didn't he help more? Why didn't he stop it? But see, he does. So he frequently told the descendants of Shem, us, to attack and rid themselves of the peril of the Canaanites. I mean, there's the vision. I'll go over a few of them. Obadiah 20, the capacity of the host of the children of Israel shall possess that of the Canaanites. Joshua, yet it came to pass when the children were waxing strong that they put the Canaanites to tribute, but did not utterly drive them out. Last one, ye shall drive out all inhabitants of the land, Canaan, before you, and ye shall dispossess the inhabitants of the land and dwell therein. For I've given you the land to possess it. If you will not drive out the inhabitants of the land before you, and this is big, then it shall come to pass that those who ye let remain of them shall be pricks in your eyes and thorn in your sides, and shall vex you in the land wherein ye dwell. It shall come to pass that I shall unto you as I thought to do unto them. Powerful, dude. So God told his followers, they are evil people. If you don't get rid of them, they will come back and do what I instructed to do to you. Wild, dude. So God told us what to do. And us being these kind people, we believe that they could be saved or could be rescued when they couldn't. For a while they did try, and the Shem's descendants tried to fight the Canaanites, but eventually time, power, media, news, it gets pushed aside, and the descendants of Shem, us, forgot, and we are blinded by our goodness, so to speak. And there's literally, though, 85 Bible verses, 85, about how you need to get rid of these evil SOBs, right? 85, and we just ignore them all. But once again, it's our goodness and our inability to process this real evil, true evil. That's why not everyone's a conspiracy theorist, because they're good people. They could never imagine the government setting up to crash or to blow up the Twin Towers while people are in it. They could never imagine that in their wildest days, because they're good people. And I don't know what separates us from the general public. Maybe it's a curiosity, an inquisitive being or something, or I don't know why we're the way we are. We're kind of insane, but that's why it's so hard for people to believe conspiracies, because they're good people and they wouldn't, you know, put syphilis and test it on African Americans and not tell them for 40 years. They wouldn't install coups that get millions of people slaughtered for profit for a company. And I go on and on about like these Bible verses and God telling us to rid of Canaanites, but the Bible is incessantly mocked, right? And I always say this, and because of this mocking, we don't even realize that we were warned at all, but I didn't realize we were warned about this. And I'm sure many of us have no idea about that, but that's what it's one, another trick that they do to blind us, that there's this evil that exists on earth and it's warned about in the Bible. And so the Canaanites, they were able to manipulate and corrupt even our religious leaders and regular leaders of society. Their greed blinded them, sold their people to evil for profit. And these barbaric practices of the Canaanites were never secret, nor were they unknown in the ancient times, as the Bible references many times these evil things they do. They sacrificed their sons and daughters to the demon. They poured out innocent blood, the blood of their sons and daughters, whom they sacrificed to the idols of Canaan. These people were vicious. So we can easily make this connection of these evil people and the secret societies of today, the Klaus Schwabs, the Arkids of today. God even told us not to marry the Canaanite women. He said, "I will make them a terror and evil for all the kingdoms of earth, a curse on all the places where I shall scatter them." And scatter them, he did. The Canaanites, as we know, they became the Phoenicians. They dispersed all along the trade routes. How do you disperse your mystery religion cult, your demon death cult? Well, if you trade with lots of places, and the Phoenicians, there's theories that they even made it to America, because I think... that's backwards. I was going to say corn. There was a corn drawing in the Rosalind Chapel, which we should know that corn comes from South America, but I was flipping it up. But regardless, there's theories that the Phoenicians went across the whole earth, which would make sense why the Mayans and these Native American cultures, some of them were so gruesome and barbaric, because that was the religion that they were taught by the Phoenicians, who were previously Canaanites. What's up, Miss Bean? Are secret societies tied to all the government agencies? I don't know if they're tied. All questions are tough. You know, I think no, probably not. But they're tied to the rule makers and the people that make the what decisions and how you're supposed to think. That's what they get. You don't need a whole agency. You just need the top person who you place to lead the group on acting in a different way. So, so the Phoenicians, because they dispersed all over, their religion went all over, later known as the Venetians. They then switched from commerce to banking, and the black nobility, like we said. Last quote from the Bible. It's just so awesome. We ignored it. He says it, but so Deuteronomy 7, "Thou shalt smite them, utterly destroy them. Thou shalt make no covenant with them. The word they use, it's like United Nations, EU, NATO, all this stuff. God says we should not do. We should not have a covenant with them, nor show mercy unto them. Ye shall deal with them, destroy their altars and break down their images, cut down their groves and burn their graven images with fire." Vicious, dude. Vicious, vicious. Badass quote. And I just started reading the Bible slowly. I don't know why I put that. I don't know. But anyway, so this was a direct commandment from God to destroy these groves and these shrines and these evil temples that they moved into secret, where they were doing barbaric practices. And what we never did, it just went to Freemasonry. And then we defend our, you know, people are fine. All of our grandparents, Freemasonry became this huge thing. Little did they know, if they got to the top, that's what it would lead to. Like, you know, I'm friends with this old guy. He's so nice. He's like 80. He's 91, I think, and I met him at the gym when I worked. And so he was a Freemason. We're not like, I treat him like my grandparents, because mine are deceased and I was, you know, my drug problems. So I'm trying to make up for what I lost. So we go out to dinner and stuff. So I'll talk Freemasonry with him. And her mom, the lady, her mom was at the Chicago World's Exposition, dude. Isn't that crazy? She went there and her dad was a 33rd degree Mason. I try to pry a little bit, but they're like, he, even now, Jack, that's his, the old guy's name. He's like very, and Evelyn, that's his wife, very cautious what they tell me about Freemasonry. Even though I know all this stuff, like the Tyler and all these little things that only Freemasons should know, but they're very cautious about what they tell me. So I find that interesting. Okay. So my my Jesuit episode, that graven images, destroy the graven images. In my Jesuit series, I talked about this, that author, Tupper Saucy, says that the Bible forbids imaging of Jesus and the biblical people, because by doing that, you're going to be worshiping not Jesus. And so I've also heard the flip side where they're like, no, that's not what it meant. So I don't know what it means. It's open to interpretation, but Mullins believes that these graven images that God advised against weren't images of Jesus. The graven images were these images of Baal and the Ashtoreth cults, which were used to, you think like pornography, they're used to create sexual excitement in their obscene rituals. So that's what God means when he talks about graven images, according to Mullins. So this battle of obscene rites still continues today, right? We have obscene images all over, these graven images, pornography, violence in movies, video games, et cetera, et cetera. This is all stuff that is a weapon to lower, to bring us close, like demon worshiping, right? Because you're a human. We don't need to see this. I always make this joke, dude. A sex scene in a movie has never, never added any value for me. If anything, it makes it awkward if I'm watching with my parents and people are banging on the screen. Why do they do that? There is no reason for that except to make us more degenerate, except to push sex right in your frontal lobe. Because, dude, they just never made a show better. Never. I mean, if you can come up with an example of when the sex scene made a movie better, I would love to hear it, because it doesn't. It just makes it uncomfortable for everybody in the room. If you're with relatives and these things, like, you can just insinuate that. I don't need to see them doing this. All right, that's the graven images, though. That's the graven images, though. Oh, God, with all the 85 verses, again, it wasn't just like, hey, maybe if you get a chance, probably take care of these people. No, he gave exact things what to do. Like, he wasn't just saying like, oh, you can listen or not listen. This is just my thoughts. This was in the Bible. This was even crazier. Oh my God. I have to read this Bible quote. I was going to skip it because I've done too many, but this again just proves to me, I'm just going to read it. Jeez. If thou will not hearken unto the voice of the Lord to observe and to do all his commandments, all these curses come upon thee and overtake thee. The Canaanites or their descendants shall get above very high and thou shalt come down very low. Listen, he shall lend thee and thou shalt not lend to him. He shall be the head and thou shalt be the tail. Damn, dude. That's what the Bible knew about usury and international banking before we did. He said, they will lend to you and you will not lend to them. Canaanites, to me, that says bankers, dude. The Federal Reserve, usury, all this stuff is Canaanite practices. The Venetians controlled the international banking. They lend us, you know, at that time, they were the head, we were the tail. And the Canaanites spread like a plague all over the earth, how I just talked about. And that's the same way how central banking slowly crept over Europe. We talked about this my last shows, you know, first in England and then the world. And even Jesus, the perfect man, he was asked by a Canaanite to cure them. And it's the Canaanite says, my daughter is severely possessed by a demon, and he ignores her at first. And so when I read that, I was like, no way. Jesus said no. But then eventually she keeps asking, and he answered, he said, it's not fair to take children's bread and throw it to the dogs. I mean, that's a powerful statement from Jesus, the God's son, he says that they are dogs, these Canaanites. And he meant like, it's not fair to take from the descendants of Shem to give to these evil people and these demon worshipers. But Jesus being the perfect man, he just got that little dig in and then he healed. He did heal the Canaanite. Just so amazing. So amazing. So the political parties of the Canaanites were the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the Zealots, the Assassins, the Herodians, and the scribes, the Edomites descending from Esau, intermarrying with Turks, producing a Turco-Edomite mixture, which became known as the Chazars or Khazars. And that blew my mind too, because I was like, shout out to Sam Tripoli. He'll say the Khazarian Mafia, and that the Khazars, which is where Ukraine war is all around Khazaria. It's all interrelated. It makes me think, is the war in Ukraine tied to something with the Canaanites, with this, what existed there, the Khazarian group. So I found that very interesting that the Bible ties the Khazars with the Canaanite group. Now I've heard, So they were divided into the Amorites, the Hittites, the Moabites, the Philistines, the Edomites, all tribes denounced in the Bible. The Canaanites, they just changed their name a lot, right? And the Bible mentions all these different groups that are the descendants of the Canaanites. Like Ammonites, they worship Moloch. The Chemos, they were demon possessed. The Ashdodites worship the fish and God, their God. They all did black magic. It was all this Canaanite religion. And the Canaanites were fertility cults, which is very important. Oh, here, I have a picture here. This is a Canaanite altar that they found. It has snakes on it, but it's an altar that they would do their sacrifices on. And so they would worship Baal as the god of fertility. So Baal, I think I had a picture of him earlier, but you guys know what Baal looks like. They represent him in different ways. Usually he's got horns, with obscene rites with his queen, Azareth. And so Egypt was the first land to be corrupted by these barbaric practices. And their barbaric rites developed a popular image of Baal, which had three heads, a cat head, a man head, and a toad. How they thought of that, dude? He must be an ugly SOB. SOB. What the heck? I got some weird... I'm going to block this thing in the chat. I got some weird block user. Isn't that ironic, everybody? This person's commenting naked stuff. Commenting in our chat talking about evil Canaanites and graven worship. Pretty wild, dude. I'll have to tell you that. Pretty ironic. So his wife Azareth, this is important. So Azareth was Baal's wife, part of the fertility god worship and all that stuff like that. Well, she was also known as Ishtar, which is the queen of heaven. Ishtar, how the Jesuits worship Mary as the queen of heaven, that was Ishtar's nickname. And there, the number of, they mentioned the queen of heaven seven times in the Bible. And there's did not worship the queen of heaven in Jeremiah. And the star goes, you can only see it like 7 days or something like that. There's some connection that he knew that that tied to Ishtar, who's Venus. So that's another thing they do by changing these names. It confuses the hell out of me or anybody that's just trying to find stuff out. But Ishtar, Azareth, that's Baal's counterpart, his wife or whatever. And in the Babylonian temples of Baal and Azareth, they served as these houses of prostitution, orgies, the temples. They were doing their occult worships. There was prostitutes and male priests for sodomy who availed themselves to their worshipers. So again, you can see how people who don't know the story of Jesus, or maybe they're not sold on that story, this religion sounds pretty good. You get to have free sex whenever you want with a bunch of people partying, drinking. And I truly believe this as well. By worshiping these demons, they get a response, dude. You get what you're asking for, no matter how bad it is for you, as opposed to us when we pray, God decides if that's going to help us or not. So, because these people put so much effort into all these secret, disgusting things, they have to have something pulling back. Someone said the demon's ears were burning. That's funny, Mac man. Did I have in this part here? Oh, so Ashtoreth, though, I wish I made this slide too late, but Ashtoreth, the Baal's counterpart, you would know what she looks like if you've ever ordered a Starbucks, because that is the goddess they have on their cup. Why, again, so a corporation that you just made coffee, why would you pick the fertility god of a demon worshiping cult as your symbol for your company, unless you're secretly practicing that religion as well? Their temples are centers of vice, and this is where voodoo also came out of. These voodoo ceremonies, which became rites in Ethiopia, they spread out, and these same rites enthrall tourists that go to the Caribbean. So you can just see how this religion just spread and spread. And listening to carnal desires for somebody that's very easy to do. You want to have sex with this person? You do. There's no requirement of love or anything like that. So you can see how this is very enticing to many people. But it spread like a plague all over. And like gradualism in movies, like, you know, in the 50s, maybe it was like the first time in Alfred Hitchcock's movie, that was the first murder. You didn't see it. And now today, you have people's heads getting blown off. That's just like this with their practices. The worshipers of Baal, they saw greater and greater excitement, right? Because their barbaric practices of torture and small children, that came because they were losing the excitement of just these big orgies and those kind of things. And it just got crazier and crazier. And they thought they got more and more power. And the Canaanite claimed all firstborn children were owed to their demon gods, given over to sacrifice. So we've seen this. I've seen that post on like Instagram and Twitter, people sacrificing their firstborn to Baal or Moloch. This is that Canaanite religion. They believe that's what you did to get power. I mean, that's scary, dude. And you could see the ties to current times. I'm not going to make that connection, but killing your firstborn, you can see why. See what this religion of Canaan, how it could possibly be seeping through in other avenues. And I'm not saying I don't even want to make a claim on that. I don't vouch into those jump into those territories, but I found that interesting. So that, like I said, these new events, these crazier events, they had in these hidden temples, because so they could not be seen by the descendants of Shem. And King Solomon even comes under the influence of these child murderers, and he rebuilt an altar to Moloch. And the parents were forced by the priest to throw their children into the fire. And excavations in 1904 in Palestine, they found ruins of a high place, a temple that was dedicated to Azarath, that containing the crude stone pillars which human sacrifices were offered on. Jars were found containing remains of children that had been sacrificed to Baal. Foundation sacrifice. They would build a new structure. And when they were building the new structure, they would put the child's remains were built into the structure, into the walls to bring good luck. So this religion, this Canaanite religion, it's not just some theory. It's not a biblical theory. There is legitimate evidence that proves that these people were doing these sick things. And I've heard stories today, or like recently in like the Great Wall of China, there's people buried inside the wall. And now, was that just laziness, or were they possibly worshiping this? The leaders were Canaanites. They were worshiping this mystery religion. I don't know, but they would build dead people into the wall. And that's what this foundation sacrifice of the Babylonians and Canaanite descendants were all into all this stuff. They also found piles of and plaques of Ashtoreth with exaggerated sex organs designed to stimulate sexual acts, pornography, which has zero oversight, by the way. Children at an average age of 11 are watching. So I think you can make this connection that pornography is a Canaanite offshoot. And the demonic nature of this sex worship is traced directly to Ham's intercourse with the witch Naamah on the ark. And yeah, we already talked. Naamah was of Nephilim parentage. And the Canaanite demonology features Lilith, who's a vampire, Resif was the god of plague, Dervor, god of pestilence, god of underworld, Maat, god of death. And now, regardless of all this historical evidence that proves this demon religion flourishing in ancient times, very little, again, appears in the history books. They don't want you connecting too many dots. But like we just said, there's countless evidence, factual stuff that we can point to that say this was a real thing going on, right? I got a vid saving dude finding an old Templar meeting site. They had a cross with the Jesus, but the chairs faced the opposite direction, facing away. Interesting, dude. And I used to think like the Templars, maybe it was like the Catholic Church that they just, because they were banking and got too powerful. Though the Catholic Church is an evil organization in its whole, I think I almost am leading to believe that the Templars were these practicing these Canaanite religion, these pagan worship, this demon worship, and the fact that they were bankers, just like God warned us, they will lend to you and you will not lend to them. The Templars were the first like organized international banking of the time, charging high usury rates. And though they did get excused by the Catholic Church for a while, I wonder if that's why. I wonder if that's why. But the Canaanites disappeared all from historical records after 1200 BC. Again, they just changed their name. Phoenicians, thus gaining a new lease on life. The barbaric Canaanites had disappeared, but these quiet, just seafaring sailors, harmless merchants folk took their place, and they were able to obtain this monopoly on the purple dye, which was prized throughout the ancient world. And also important to note, only royalty wore purple in those days. So you can see how this will help the Phoenicians maintain a super powerful monopoly in ancient days. Kings want the color. They're the only ones with the color. You have to interact with the Phoenicians. And I also think about if they're practicing this religion, they're only dealing with elite people that because they have a good that only the kings and top dogs can have. You could see how the kings and these would possibly pick up this religion as well. They say, look how much power I have. You could have this too. What does your God do for you? And you could see how that's, again, this is how this ancient mystery religion will spread. The Phoenicians learn how powerful, total monopoly. Blah, blah, blah. Our fate, Canaanite descendant bankers, CEOs, monopoly companies are just using their ancestors' ways of gaining and maintaining power. All of our CEOs, they're corporate socialists, right? They hate competition. They're not free market. They hate the free market. They want a full monopoly. The Standard Oil trust buster, that was a joke. A joke. He still owned just 44 or 49% of all these little subsidiaries that broke off of Standard Oil. There is no trust busting. There is a monopoly in so many ways, more than one. And they love it. That's what they want. They want a monopoly. And I did an episode like the Brookings Institute, which is funded by the Rockefeller. It's like might be getting confused. It's either like a super right publication or super left. And even in that, they would not be friends with Rockefeller. They said that competition was of the old days. We're in a new era where we don't need competition. It's wasteful. And you can see how the World Economic Forum is going to run with that exact kind of slogan. Like, oh, competition's wasting the small amount of resources we have. Stop competing. Just eat the bugs. Live in the pod. And Joseph, Jesus' uncle, was said to have owned a large tin. Oh, so after the purple, the Phoenicians focused on tin. That was their next monopoly, which they had a monopoly on for centuries until Joseph, Jesus' uncle, was said to have owned a large tin mine in the Cornwall, like by Greece. And Greeks were also able to discover tin, and they were able to knock out the need of having to interact with the Phoenicians, because they found these tin mines. But their name has changed. Their worship of Baal and Ashtoreth remained the same. And they established colonies all along the Mediterranean. They built temples to the Ashtoreth. And in the Egyptian city of Memphis, the Phoenician temple of Ashtoreth was the largest religious edifice, known as the wife of supreme god El and his 70 deities. Ashtoreth was sometimes worshipped as the male demon Astaroth, who survived in European rites as Astra or Ostara. And this male version became the patron god of the Nazi occult movement. That was mind blowing too. Like all these different names of the Greek pantheon and all, there are all these, the same, they're these Canaanite demons. Like, isn't that wild, dude? Isn't that wild? So the Nazis, that was their patron god, was the male version, Ostara, of Astaroth, the girl in the Starbucks cup, Baal's wife. The westernmost outpost of the Phoenicians was Cadiz, a Phoenician colony. And the most important colony was Carthage, 900 BC. They actually, and this was very interesting, the name actually Car means new or new city. So the Phoenicians often named their cities with this prefix, new. Now, how many cities do we have new of in America? If the Phoenicians did that, one would believe that the Black nobility and the Venetians and this Canaanite religion named the cities that and states that in America because it's their, like, it was their next round of barbaric practices. So in the 5th century, though, the Carthaginians fought the Greeks and survived, but in 264 BC, Rome attacked in full force, and this became known as the Punic Wars, and that's because the Carthaginians called themselves Punics, but they actually referred to themselves as Canaanites, but it was a secret code that they didn't use to outsiders. So the Carthage and the people there, they referred to each other as Canaanites, but not to the outside world. And regardless, the Romans were determined to utterly destroy Carthage. They razed the city. They're so bad. Archaeologists still are not sure where Carthage is because how badly the Romans destroyed that city. There was 3 Punic Wars, and it ended with the defeat of Hannibal by the Roman armies. And they took literally, they destroyed the city, and every member of Carthage was either went to slavery. They sowed the land with salt so nothing could flourish there, and nothing did ever again. I mean, vicious, dude. That they, and to think, like, Romans fought a lot of people. They didn't salt the earth for everybody. I mean, these people must have been very evil for them to do, for them to take such a drastic response, you know? And as always, though, some of the Carthaginians, they survived, and they vowed to despise all things Roman. This is important. For example, fascism. I know you may not agree with me, but certain types, it's not inherently bad, right? The word itself is not. Caesar was a fascist. I think Caesar was an awesome leader. But it's used negatively because the fasces was a Roman symbolism, a symbol of their leaders. So if this were to believe this story, you could see why all things Roman, the Canaanites despise. And they, the Catholic Church, how many stories do you see on the Catholic Church that where they highlight a priest or what he, an evil act he's done, but never give the same magnifying glass to government school teachers or things like that. And the Freemason attacks on Christians and the Catholic Church, Freemasonry and Catholicism, at the top, they worked together, but at the bottom, they were fighting each other. There's papal bulls and all this stuff like that. But they were fighting because this is their most hated enemy. Freemasonry comes from the Canaanites. Their most hated enemy is the Romans. They destroyed their biggest HQ city. They salted the earth and they vowed revenge. And that's why the Pope is the embodiment of that force that destroyed HQ. I like this. So I'm going to read this. What he's played out. He said, and that's why they hold disdain for God, because he doesn't make himself known to them the same way he isn't known to the idiots praising his name in their bread and circus propaganda of a dream they've been sold. I like that, dude. I like that. But Shem's descendants also spread across the earth, and we founded these great kingdoms and dynasties and societies that Western civilization was built off of. And Mullins's take is like, Never mind. We're not even going to get into that. Too confusing, too much room for manipulation. Let me just see where we, and so he even talks about like that the King of Ireland and the Irish story removing all the snakes out of Ireland was because Shem's descendants went all the way up to Ireland and there was Canaanites there. And they're symbolized because Canaanites is a descendant of Satan and the snake, that was really what the story was about, was that Shem's descendant was able, one of us, removed all the Canaanites out of Ireland, and that's why there's no poisonous snakes in Ireland. I thought that was an interesting, this was wild, dude, wild. Okay, so Tamar, there's like this confusion with, it's this part is out of, the omitted from the King James Version Bible, but there's 3 tribes of Judah. 2 were Shem descendants and 1 was a tainted branch. This branch was out of wedlock marriage with a Canaanite mother. And so 2 twins were born in this 3 tribe confusion, but the tainted branch, 2 twins were born. And the midwife wanted to mark the firstborn because they were killing them at this point and just doing crazy things. So it was important. So what she does is she wraps a red thread around the firstborn's wrist. And this immediately made me think, dude, I could pull them up, but you have Google. Like, Google red bracelets of the elites. Tucker Carlson, Nancy Pelosi, all of these people, they have a red bracelet. And that is the Canaanite line, the same thing the midwife did. And because the way it's, why it's even weirder is, like, I saw it on Tucker's wrist and Nancy Pelosi's wrist. It's just a string. It's not like a red gold bracelet or anything like that. It's a literal, it's an odd jewelry piece to wear, right? And I think it comes from this story, from the Canaanite, the tribe that was tainted with the Canaanite blood wore red bracelets. I just thought that was mind blowing, dude. Tamar, the mother of the twins, had a descendant known as Tamar Teffy, and she married the King of Ireland. And so we already talked about that. And a scarlet thread has been like an integral part to our history. So a red thread is symbolically woven into every rope used by the British Royal Navy. Every British monarch draped in a red, has documents draped in a red cord, red tape, the official red cord, which must be unwound before business is transacted. Business, Canaanites, red tape, red carpet is unrolled before royalty walks in. And Mullins is making this connection that it all stems from that red bracelet that was put on the tainted line of Canaanite blood. So I thought that was, ooh, Carl says, Phil Lesh, Grateful Dead, wears red wristband, red string. Dude, I never knew that's where this came from, but I think we can agree that that's probably where this connection is they're secretly showing their Canaanite either affiliation or ancestry. So there's no poisonous Saint, the later legend, Saint Patrick, he expelled the serpents from Ireland. So that was a later legend after this one about the Canaanites. And there's names. There's so many names. I don't want to confuse anybody, but basically the legend changed to St. Patrick, but both legends called the attention to the demonic practices of the Canaanites, as well as their descent from the serpent, establishing Ireland as a land of true religion of God, descendants of Shem. And there also represents obviously the Canaanites' power vanishing from Ireland. But you still have this battle today, right? A biblical battle is still raging today. The highly creative, productive, loving descendants of Shem versus the Canaanite followers and possibly bloodlines. And just don't want to, I don't want to get too much in the weeds. Oh, so last thing we'll talk about here. We talked about that will of Canaan and how they keep their loyalty to each other beyond belief. So what we have seen, right, are these great places that have empires that have been built. They're not taken down usually by like a warring tribe. They're often brought down by the inside. Think of America right now. All international or Federal Reserve has ruined America. It's ensured our destruction and defeat and leading us into a communistic, socialistic government, which is very, it's tied to Satan worship and all these things like that. And I truly believe that communism is an evil practice. But they do this because the descendants of Canaanites, they're not builders. They're manipulators. They're savvy. They're smart at how to trick, because that's in their brain, is to trick and be loyal to each other and to lie, to cheat, to steal. That's in their will of Canaan, which we already talked about. And so that's what's going on right now. So it's, this battle is still raging today. The Teutonic Knights, the German version of the Knights Templar, still had, so basically this battle still goes on today, and that's what they're trying to institute, this religious, barbaric religious practice back into the temples, back into the mainstream. They're trying to bring it back. And we see that. Look on TikTok. I mean, it's literally insane territory stuff that anybody 30 years ago would be like, oh my God, this person is possessed by a demon. And it's happening, dude. They're trying to normalize this so you feel like the crazy person, and they promote this belief of, mutilation and all these things, because it's all stems back to their Canaanite religion. So that's the show for tonight. Tomorrow, or the next episode, we're going to talk about Cain more significantly and a few other things, continuing this story of the curse of Canaan. But this evilness that's on earth, all these movements, the free sex movement and promiscuity and drug usage and acting that's freedom is to do whatever the hell you want. It all stems from those orgies of ball, this Canaanite religion, these obscene sexual rites. And yeah, so that's the show. So I hope you guys enjoyed it. I learned a lot. Hopefully you learned a lot. And like I said, if I have some listeners that are in the chat right now, they know way more about the Bible than I do. So any corrections, feel free to make them, dude. I don't, you know, I'm just reporting on Mullins's book. And I wanted to do this because it's a little different. I love history, you know, conspiracies, but I wanted to get into something more like what stems from all this evilness. So I thought it was good. So, David, no worries, dude. You're the real man. You're doing man stuff, my man. Building, creating, like Shem's fought, like Shem, like the good Shem descendant you are. And thanks, Weez Plato, Lachin, thank you, Carl, all you guys, Brian, have a good night. Sunday, I got a show with a guy named Counterpoints, who's like, he does debates and stuff. So I think he's a Ukraine supporter. So that's going to be an interesting show. I don't debate, but I'll be interested to see what he says to like my responses. And so that's Sunday at 7 o'clock. And that's it, guys. Thanks, Brian. Thank you so much. All right, guys. Much love. God bless. I'll see you soon. Take care. Bye.